Hi everyone, Drew Perode here with another mini episode for you where we take some of our most popular episodes, we trim them down to something digestible and feature the best segments. Today we have my dear friend Chris Kresser on the podcast today talking about the top three nutritional deficiencies. Chris Kresser is an incredible functional medicine practitioner and acupuncturist and Chinese herbal medicine doctor who knows a ton about how to fix nutrient deficiencies. He knows a ton because he was previously the owner and proprietor of the California Center of Functional Medicine, and him and his team have worked with thousands of patients. He also runs the ADAPT framework where he trains functional medicine doctors. My brother-in-law actually went through his training too. So he's going to bring you the latest and greatest on nutritional deficiencies. So in addition to the top three nutrient deficiencies, Chris Kresser also talks about the key signs that you're nutrient deficient. He also covers nutrients that people can get too much of, good nutrients that people can get too much of, nutrients people should be careful supplementing with, a few of them that you've heard over the years might be good for you, but maybe they might not be. And lastly, he goes into why phytonutrients are so important and how to get more of them in your diet. It's a fantastic mini episode, some of the gems from our previous full episode with Chris Kresser. I hope you enjoy it. What are the top three reasons that even people who eat pretty healthy would end up having a nutrient deficiency? A lot of people think, I'm eating super healthy. How could I be someone that is likely to have a nutrient deficiency? So you're going to give us three reasons why.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that actually surprised me as I learned about this over time. So the first is a change in soil quality. So it's not that nutrients aren't in the soil anymore. It's that we've disrupted the microbiome of the soil. So in a very similar way that we've messed up our own guts, industrial agriculture, pesticides, fertilizers, and the chemicals that we put into the soil have changed the biome of the soil in such a way that the plants can no longer extract the same level of nutrients from the soil that they used to be able to. So one of the examples I saw in a paper I read is that today we'd have to eat 8 oranges to get the same level of nutrition that our grandparents got from just eating 1 orange.
Wow.
So this is across the board, both vitamins and minerals. And we've seen declines ranging from 20 to 60% or higher over the past 100 years alone. So that's a profound change just in recent times. Mm. So the second issue is the increase in toxins in the food supply. So we have heavy metals, lead, mercury, arsenic, cadmium, et cetera. And then we have things like glyphosate, bisphenol A, chemicals that are now ubiquitous in the environment and that have gotten into the soil and the food supply. And what happens there is these chemicals often bind to nutrients, primarily minerals, but also in some cases vitamins. So then we either don't absorb them at all, or we absorb those nutrients with a toxin on board and we don't get the same benefit and can even be harmed by that.
So toxins can block the absorption of key nutrients.
Absolutely. And in some ways, nutrients like take the hit because that's one of the jobs that nutrients can do is try to protect us against toxins. But as a result, we don't get the benefit of the nutrient that we would get if it wasn't bound to a toxin.
Wow.
And then the third reason is an increase in chronic disease. So this hits us on both ends. Chronic disease increases the demand for nutrients. A good example would be vitamin D. People with obesity and metabolic problems often do not absorb as much vitamin D from food, and they are not as efficient at converting sunlight into vitamin D. So they might need 10,000 IU per day of vitamin D just to maintain normal levels because of their health status. Whereas someone who's lean and healthy, you know, needs maybe 2,000 IU or 1,000 IU per day. On the other hand, people with chronic disease don't absorb nutrients as well. So this is a big problem because now 6 in 10 Americans have a chronic disease and 4 in 10 Americans have multiple chronic diseases. So we're not just talking about a small section of the population that's affected by this. We're talking about the majority of Americans and also, you know, other people in the industrialized world.
So let's flip this question, and there's a lot to drill down there, which we're going to get into, but let's flip this question for everyone listening and say, just if we're trying to understand from a top line level, and I'm going to, you know, I know there's more to this question than what I'll present it first as, if people are paying attention to at least what are those top three nutrient deficiencies, right? What are those top three ones as they start to think about, okay, hey, I'm susceptible. Even if I have organic, the soil is being changed, you know, toxins, other things, we all are exposed to them in the environment. So if there was three of those, that would be the top three. And I know there's more than that we're going to drill down on, but what would be those top three? This episode is brought to you by Cozy Earth. How amazing would it be if we could give the gift of a good night's sleep? Especially with the holidays right around the corner, I can't imagine a better way to show my love to the loved ones in my life and let them know how much I care. But gifting good quality sleep isn't super realistic. Believe me, if I could, I would give it to everyone. So instead, I like giving the key pieces that help set the stage for a relaxing and comfortable sleep environment. That's why this holiday season, I'm giving the gift of Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth's loungewear, pajamas, and bed sheets are made from ethically sourced bamboo, a super lightweight, breathable, machine washable fabric. Who wouldn't be stoked to jump into something soft and comfy like that for the holidays? Right now, Cozy Earth is offering my community their highest discount ever of 40% off. Just go to CozyEarth.com with the discount code Drew. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-Y, Earth, EARTH.com with the code DHRU. That's Drew, that's me. Keep in mind, by the way, that Cozy Earth has a 10-year warranty, so you can't go wrong giving them a shot. You know, I just turned 40 this year. I can honestly say I've never felt better. So many people have this fear of getting older because they think it has to come with chronic disease and deteriorating mental and physical health. If that were the case, I'd be worried about getting older too, but it doesn't have to be that way. It's possible to get older and stay young at the same time, but sometimes we just need a little help knowing exactly how to do it. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Inside Tracker's new inner age test that allows you to see your inner age and how it compares with your chronological age, and it gives you a longevity-focused plan with science-backed recommendations to help you make sure your best days are still ahead of you. Right now, they're offering my podcast community 20% off. Just go to insidetracker.com/Drew. That's DHRU to get your discount code and to try it out for yourself today. That's insidetracker.com/Drew for 20% off your order today.
So I think vitamin D is probably the most important. So 94% of Americans don't get enough vitamin D, and there are similar statistics in other countries around the world. And we now know from thousands of studies that have been published over the past 20 to 30 years that vitamin D is essential for everything from immune function to bone health to cardiovascular health to metabolic function. It's really kind of a do everything type of nutrient, even a hormone, you know, it plays some functions of a hormone. And if you look at almost every chronic disease that is on, you know, the top 20 list in the US, it's in some way connected to vitamin D and vitamin D deficiency. So this is, I think, one of the biggest, you know, health issues of our time. And it's relatively easy to correct once you become aware of it and pay attention to it. But even with the attention that it's had over the past, you know, couple of decades, we still see really high rates of vitamin D deficiency. The next would be potassium. And actually, the rates of potassium deficiency are even higher than vitamin D, or I should say, the number of people that are not getting enough potassium. It might not be outright deficiency, but they're not getting enough potassium to meet their needs. And this is a huge problem because potassium and sodium exist in a tight relationship. And when you have too much sodium, which you get from eating a lot of processed and refined foods, which make up 60% of the calories that the average American eats now, and not enough potassium, one of the worst outcomes of that is hypertension. High blood pressure. And high blood pressure is the number one risk factor for cardiovascular disease and heart attack, which is still the number one cause of death. So that's a very big deal. The potassium intakes today in the modern world are as low as 1/10 of what they were for our ancestors. So
the problem, just to do a little sidebar, it's not just that we're getting too much sodium, which most of the sodium is coming from processed foods. Yeah. It's not coming from the sea salt that we're all putting on our, you know, food, because you really couldn't even eat that much sodium and still enjoy a meal. It would taste like crap. Is that we're not getting the right amount of potassium, which causes a whole bunch of challenges.
That's right. And this is, it's a good point that you bring up, and it's true for so many other nutrients as well. So for vitamin D, vitamin D doesn't just exist in isolation in our body. There are many other nutrients that support vitamin D's function. Magnesium is another, and I'll use that as the third nutrient that I don't think people are getting enough of. Magnesium is a cofactor for vitamin D. So what that means is that magnesium is needed for vitamin D to perform its functions. So you could potentially have enough vitamin D, but if you're magnesium deficient or not getting enough magnesium, you're still going to actually manifest vitamin D deficiency symptoms because you don't have enough magnesium. Now, magnesium is a little bit trickier to tease out how many people are deficient, because I think the statistics are misleading. They say about 52% are deficient, so still the majority of Americans not getting enough. But I think that's a significant underestimate, because the RDA, a recommended dietary allowance for magnesium, was last updated in 1997. RDA is based on body weight. The average body weight for a female at that point, adult, was 135 pounds, and for a male was 165 pounds. Today, in 2022, the average weight of a female is about the same as it was for a male then, about 165 pounds, 170 pounds. The average weight of a male is almost 200 pounds. And a paper was published last year in 2021 that said, hey, we need to update the RDAs now based on the average body weight. Well, when they did that, they found that the RDA had increased by over 200 milligrams per day for both males and females, and that the average person is getting 200 to 300 milligrams per day less of magnesium than they need. So again, not a small amount. That's like way more than you would get in a multivitamin if you were taking. And it's twice the amount that people are eating generally.
You know, you have a practice as well, where you have a group of doctors that work with you. You see patients as well too. What are some of the signs? And I know mostly people that come to you are usually individuals that are really suffering and have not been able to get an answer. We can chat about those folks in a second, but occasionally you get people who are generally doing pretty good, but now all of a sudden maybe not are doing well. What are some signs for people who eat healthy, who feel like they have things under control, for some of those top deficiencies you mentioned? Like, they're not suffering from like maybe a deep chronic disease, or if they are, it's they've kept it at bay because their lifestyle is so on point. What are some of those signs that they might notice, this individual who is eating pretty healthy, that are related to nutrient deficiency? Like, what are things that they would notice on their body or cognition or other stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think fatigue is one of the telltale symptoms for sure.
So I'm just more tired than normal. I can't recover the same way.
Yep. Poor recovery from exercise, exercise intolerance, poor sleep, which has become epidemic, skin issues, hair issues, you know, hair loss, both for men and women, problems with, you know, sexual function or vitality, digestive issues, big one, mood problems. So like either mild depression, anxiety, cognitive issues, a really big one, like brain fog, gaps in memory, like can't quite get that word, you know, difficulty with word recall, problems with focusing. Those are probably, you know, the ones that stand out the most to me. And I like the way Mark Hyman talks about it, feels like crud.
crap is a curse word on here, but so, you can curse.
Just doesn't feel right. I don't feel right. You know, that's like people come in and say, I just don't feel the way that I used to. And then, you know, the typical doctor would be like, oh, you're just getting older, pat on the back, you know, send you on your way. But I don't think that that's necessarily a natural consequence of aging. I think that what is happening there in all likelihood is the body needs 40 micronutrients to function properly. That's like these nutrients that we've been talking about are like the fuel that you put in your car. And if you're putting in low octane fuel, or your car is constantly running out of gas and doesn't have enough, it's not going to operate the way that it should. And this is what's so tricky with nutrient issues is we're not talking about deficiencies at the level that will cause like scurvy, you know, right. Vitamin C or rickets, or where people are going to die, or they're going to develop like a life-threatening condition and end up in the hospital. If it was that, you know, there would be like all hands on deck, you know, this would be a national crisis, global. And certainly there are people who are dealing with it at that level, but most of the people listening to this show don't fall into that group. The problem with this, and what makes it even tougher to deal with, is that they are lower level nutrient inadequacies that don't cause typically life-threatening issues, at least not in right in the moment. They can contribute to chronic diseases that threaten our life over time, but you know, they're not going to put you in the hospital tomorrow. What they're going to do is slowly degrade your quality of life. And they're going to do it in a way that you're not even aware of why that's happening. And you might often start looking for other causes that are, yes, they might be related, but they're missing that key underlying issue, which is that I'm not getting enough nutrients.
So let's go back to this one other idea that you had shared with me, which is that which nutrients can you get too much of, right? I think that's important this day and age where we all, I'm guilty as included. First, I'm in this industry, I'm always trying different stuff that are there. But like anybody else, I have a big cabinet full of a lot of different supplements that are there. And even though I'm the person in this field that's asking questions, I'm by no means the expert. I'm just proximity to a lot of the experts like you out there. I often wonder myself, like, am I getting too much of this particular thing? So are people, or is there a risk of getting too much nutrients, especially when people are looking at their diet with supplementation?
Yeah, I think with food, it's pretty unusual to get too much of a nutrient, because the body has mechanisms for avoiding that when the intake is through food. So for example, with iron, usually if you eat more iron than you need, you just excrete the remainder. And there is a caveat there where some people who have a genetic condition called hemochromatosis, that leads to excess storage of iron, even when they don't need any more iron, and they can get dangerously high iron levels. But that's a genetic issue. It doesn't affect, you know, most people. So usually when you're eating food, it's going to be much safer. The issues start with supplementation typically. And, you know, I want to provide the caveat that nutrient inadequacy is a way, way bigger
way
problem.
Bigger issue,
so
right?
I almost hesitate to talk about this, but I think you're right. It is a bigger problem now because you have so many people that are supplementing, and so many people that are supplementing with, unfortunately, without maybe the right guidance or fully understanding, not, you know, their own fault, but just there isn't enough guidance on the supplementation process. So one example would be vitamin D. I just mentioned that it's vitamin D deficiency is a way, way bigger problem. And I've had patients come in to my clinic and I've tested their vitamin D and it's 130. And that's a toxic level of vitamin D that can cause kidney stones and make your arteries stiff and increase the risk of heart disease. It's definitely problematic. And I asked them, you know, what's going on? Have you been supplementing with vitamin D? Yeah, they've been taking 50,000 IU per day of vitamin D for like 10 years, you know, which is a dose that was way, way too high. And they never should have been prescribed that dose probably in the first place, or they should have been told very explicitly, you know, only do this for a week and then stop and go back to like a more maintenance dose. But that's happened more times than I can count in the last 15 years. Iron, I mentioned, is another issue.
And just real quick before you go to iron, share your thoughts on where you think ideal vitamin D numbers are meant to be,
yeah,
right, in the body. And it might be a little bit nuanced compared to maybe some of the stuff that people are hearing out there. And you've written a whole article on the subject that I came across years ago. We'll link to it in the show notes as well. But yeah, can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it is nuanced. And even most recently, I've heard vitamin D scientists, people who've pretty much dedicated their entire career to studying vitamin D, advocate for what they call a personal vitamin D range. Mm. So this is an attempt to recognize that there are many different individual factors that affect vitamin D absorption and utilization and even demand and need, and that we need to really up our game and get more specific about what an appropriate level of vitamin D is for each different population or group of people. And I'll give you an example. People of African American descent tend to be more efficient at converting the inactive form of vitamin D to the active form of vitamin D. So they might not need to have serum vitamin D levels as high as someone of Northern European descent who is less efficient at making that conversion. We know that, I mentioned earlier in the show, people with obesity and metabolic issues have problems absorbing vitamin D from food and also converting sunlight into vitamin D. So they need more vitamin D than somebody who doesn't have those issues. Same for people with chronic disease. Vitamin D production from sunlight depends on so many different factors. Like here we are in Santa Monica. It's sunny and outside, it's summertime. You could go outside and in 20 minutes probably produce all the vitamin D that you need. But if you're in Stockholm in the winter, you could spend 8 hours outside and you're not going to produce enough vitamin D. So all of those factors combine. I'm going to try to make this as simple as possible. I think for the vast majority of people, a range between 40 and 60 is a good thing to shoot for. That's a range that studies have shown will, you know, optimize all of the functions of vitamin D and minimize any downside risks of having too much vitamin D. Now, in terms of how you get there, that's where the variance is pretty high. So some people don't even need to supplement at all, although that's in the distinct minority. Just getting enough sun exposure and eating, you know, cold water fatty fish and pasture-raised meats and other foods that have, you know, some amount of vitamin D is enough for them. I'm actually in that category for most of the year. Other people need 10,000 IU per day. I have many patients that need that just to maintain that range of 40 to 60. So what I recommend generally is people start with maybe 2,000 to 4,000 IU per day, and then they test, get themselves tested, maybe at the beginning of the fall before they're going into, or in the fall before they're going into the winter, see what their level is. If it's lower than that, they bump up the dose, especially because they're going into a time of year typically that is less sunlight, less sun exposure. And then they test again the following spring, see where their levels are and adjust accordingly. If you don't have access to testing, 5,000 IU per day has been shown in numerous studies to be a safe dose for the vast majority of people and to be effective at reaching those levels for the vast majority of people. So if I were to boil it all down, simplify it to that, that would be my recommendation.
And other key nutrients, again, there's probably a whole list, but specifically with vitamin D, if people are taking vitamin D, I think there's been a little bit of education, but still some people are in the dark about this. You know, you hear about K2. How important is K2? How important is magnesium? What do you want people who have been taking vitamin D, especially because of everything that's happened over the last couple of years, what should they know about taking vitamin D?
Yeah, all of the fat-soluble vitamins work synergistically together. So that's vitamin A, vitamin K2, and vitamin E are particularly important with vitamin D. K2 regulates calcium metabolism and helps with the, and vitamin D does that as well. So they work together to make sure that calcium gets deposited in the bones and the teeth and the hard tissues where we want it and stays out of the soft tissues. And that's one reason why when vitamin D is so high, it has the opposite effect. Actually, calcium ends up in the soft tissues and causes, you know, kidney stones and those other problems that we mentioned. Magnesium, as we talked about, is a cofactor for vitamin D, and vitamin D requires magnesium to fulfill all of its functions. So that's very important as well. And then vitamin A, one of its main functions is to reduce the toxicity threshold of vitamin D. So let's say your vitamin D is at 75 and you're vitamin A deficient. Well, you might actually experience vitamin D toxicity symptoms at that level because of that vitamin A deficiency. Whereas if you have plenty of vitamin A, even if your vitamin D is 100 or 110, you might be okay because of vitamin A's ability to protect against the toxicity of vitamin D.
We started off the interview by talking about maybe the top three nutrients that are there. Let's expand on that a little bit further. So tease us out and take us down the list of other ones that are in the top ones, whatever it is, the top 10, 15, whatever, that are also key nutrients that we want to be paying attention to. So you talked a lot about vitamin D, magnesium, potassium, right? What are some other ones you want to drill down that you feel like don't get enough attention, but are still an important part of us living optimally?
So vitamin K, we've touched on K and K2 briefly, but they're not the same. You know, they're in the same family, of course, but in the last 40 to 50 years, I think, you know, we really discovered that vitamin K2 has different functions than vitamin K1. K1 is mostly about clotting. And K2, as I mentioned, helps to regulate calcium metabolism and ensure that calcium gets into the bones and teeth and stays out of the soft tissues. And not surprisingly, studies have shown that when you don't get enough K2, your risk of heart disease goes up, and your risk of osteopenia and osteoporosis, you know, bone-related disorders, goes up as well. And there are a lot of studies out of Japan showing that really high doses of K2 can help to even reverse osteoporosis in some cases. So K2 is a bit of a trickier one because it's not in a ton of foods that we eat in the US today, with the exception of cheese. So K2 is produced in the process of fermentation. So hard cheeses tend to be pretty good sources of K2. Pasture-raised eggs can be a decent source of K2. Fermented foods like sauerkraut or kimchi, which I think more and more people are starting to eat, are good sources. Kefir is a pretty good source. And then you have the top source, which almost no one I know eats, is called natto, which is a fermented soy product that's popular in Japan, but it has a very, very strong flavor that people either hate, or I guess some people love it. I was going to say hate or tolerate, but there are people who love it. So K2 is one that, you know, you could get enough of if you're eating dairy products and pasture-raised eggs and other fermented foods. But if you're not eating those, you probably will need to supplement. Choline is another really, really important nutrient that some studies have shown that 100% don't get enough. That the nurse's health data says 92%. It's really important for cellular health and because choline is a constituent in cell membranes. And so if you don't get enough choline, I mean, pretty much everything in the body is composed of cells. So if you don't get enough choline, nothing is going to work optimally, particularly brains and our brain and nervous system. So you can get all kinds of cognitive or neurological, neurodegenerative issues as a result of choline deficiency. And guess what one of the biggest sources of choline is? Liver. it's, again, not very easy to come by in the diet. So mostly animal foods and organ meats in particular are really good sources of choline. Calcium is a really interesting one. I want to talk a little bit about calcium and vitamin A. So calcium, as everyone knows, I think now, is really important for bones and bone health in particular. It plays a number of other essential roles. One of the biggest issues with calcium is bioavailability. So when you mentioned nutrition labels, if you go into Whole Foods and you get like a bag of spinach, you know, in one of the pre-washed bags, and you turn it around, you look at the label, it will say that it has a certain amount of calcium and a certain percentage of the RDA. What that label is not telling you is that you are going to absorb about 5% of the calcium that's listed there from that spinach, which is a big problem, right? Like, it should say that on the label. That's a whole nother tangent, but that's because calcium contains oxalic acid, or oxalate. Oxalate binds to and inhibits the absorption of calcium. So even though there's a lot of calcium on paper in spinach, you're going to absorb very little of it. So I've seen studies that suggest you would have to eat about 16 cups of spinach to get the same amount of calcium that you get from 1 8-ounce glass of milk, because the calcium in milk is something like 30 or 40% bioavailable versus 5%. So that's a huge difference. And I think a lot of people are not aware of that. So even though the studies say 44% of people don't get enough calcium, those numbers are not considering bioavailability. And if they did, I suspect that that would be more like 80 or 90% not getting enough bioavailable calcium that their bodies can actually use and absorb. Vitamin A is similar. The nurse's health data says 43% don't get enough vitamin A, but that groups together retinol, which is the active form of vitamin A that does most of what we want it to do, and beta carotene, or carotenes in general, which are inactive precursor forms of vitamin A. So it's true that the body can convert beta carotenes into vitamin A, into active vitamin A, but that conversion is really variable. It can be as low as 5% and as high as 40-45%. So if you're someone who's on the very low end of that range, you can eat all the carrots and red peppers and beta carotene rich foods you want. The very little of that is going to get converted into retinol, and you can still have a retinol deficiency. And I see that all the time. Keratosis pilaris, which are the bumps on the back of arm, typically in the upper arm, that's a sign of vitamin A deficiency. It's a really easy way to see if you might be dealing with that.
A lot of, just anecdotally, I'm just sharing here, a lot of, because I grew up in the, you know, Indian background, Ayurvedic, everything like that, a huge percentage of people are vegetarian. A lot of my friends who are still vegetarian anecdotally have a lot of those bumps. Not saying that it's only a vegetarian thing. There's other people that have it too, but it's just something that I remembered growing up.
That's exactly right. And that's often a consequence of that poor conversion. And this is where nutrient synergy, to just tie this all back together, the conversion of the less active forms of vitamins to the more active forms, whether we're talking about beta carotene into vitamin A or retinol, or vitamin K1 can get converted into K2, or alpha linolenic acid, ALA, gets converted into EPA and DHA, which are the long chain omega-3 fats. There are numerous steps in that conversion pathway. All of those steps require various nutrients, you know, vitamins and minerals to be completed. So if you're deficient in any of those nutrients, your conversion of the inactive to the active forms is going to be much worse. So this is where the synergy of nutrients plays a role once again. So this is, you know, coming back to your question about other nutrients, like vitamin A and calcium, even though statistically we're seeing like, you know, only 40%, which is still nearly half the population are not getting enough. If we took those factors that I just discussed into account, I think those levels would be even higher, and, you know, similar levels of vitamin D and choline and potassium.
Let's switch topics and talk about phytonutrients. Help people understand why they're either not paying enough attention to it, and then also any kind of navigation that we have to think when it comes to phytonutrients. So what are they? Why are they important?
So phytonutrients are nutrients, phyto is plant, and so they're basically plant nutrients. And I have always advocated that the optimal human diet is some combination of both animal and plant nutrients. Now, that's that could be a huge difference. If you look at traditional cultures around the world, you see some cultures that consumed almost all animal foods, but they would go out of their way to get that small amount of plant food that they ate. Conversely, you would see the opposite, where, you know, some cultures would eat almost all of their calories from plant foods, but they would go to great lengths to get the highly prized animal foods because they knew, not through, you know, scientific analysis, but through hard-won experience, that those animal foods were essential to their health. They contained, you know, something about them, they didn't know what, was really important for their health and well-being. And likewise, I think most human beings that are alive today do best with some combination of plant and animal foods. The reason for that is that there are different nutrients in animal foods and plant foods. And there are some nutrients that are exclusively found in plant foods, flavonoids, carotenes, beta-glucan, et cetera, you know, fiber, different types of fibers that we know nourish and feed our gut bacteria. Those are primarily or exclusively found in plant foods. And then you have nutrients like B12 that we just talked about, heme, iron, bioavailable forms of zinc, EPA and DHA, the long chain omega-3 fats, choline. Choline is found in other plant foods, but, you know, highest sources in certain animal foods. Those nutrients we can either exclusively get from animal foods or preferentially get them because they're much more bioavailable and absorbable. For that reason, I think a combination of animal and plant foods is best. Now, throughout the podcast, we've been talking about essential nutrients. Those are vitamins and minerals. And the term essential has a specific meaning here. which is that it's not just really important, although they are really important. It's that the body cannot manufacture them on its own, and we need to obtain them from the diet, and we can't live without them. A lot of these phytonutrients, we can live without them. You could go your whole lifetime without eating a phytonutrient and you could still be a lot, you know, you could live. You might not live. I don't think you'll live as long and as healthy of a life. There's some controversy about this. The carnivore advocates would argue vehemently with me on this, but I think most of the data suggests that, you know, phytonutrients tremendously benefit our health. And if we only just talk about fiber, that's a good starting place, because fiber doesn't nourish us in any way. Like, we don't even digest or absorb fiber. It doesn't do anything for human nutrition. What it does is it feeds the beneficial bacteria and microbes in our gut. And we know that they then have tremendous benefits for human health. And so all different types of fiber, resistant starch, non-starch polysaccharides, soluble fiber, beta-glucan, which is a fiber that is highly prevalent in mushrooms, is just like a hot, hot topic in the scientific literature, because it's been shown that beta-glucan, which is a unique type of soluble fiber, has profound immune benefits, anti-cancer fighting properties, helps us to fight off infections, viral, bacterial, fungal infections. It stimulates, you know, the growth of good bacteria and inhibits the growth of bad bacteria. It's almost kind of like this miraculous substance. And we hardly even knew about it until, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. And now you've got like hundreds or thousands of studies on turkey tail and reishi and lion's mane mushrooms, which are all, you know, almost, you know, between like 40 and 60% beta glucan by weight. So it's exciting to see the new research showing how these phytonutrients, while they may not be essential in the sense that we literally can't survive without them, they are, I think, extremely important to our health and well-being.
Yeah, it's great to see so much attention being placed on them, and how a lot of people are arguing that actually, if we're thinking, like you mentioned, if we're thinking optimally, they are essential.
Yeah.
They are essential for our lives. What are some of the phytonutrients that, in addition to beta-glucan, that, you know, from the literature that's out there, remember many years ago talking to Deanna Minnick, who's a PhD in the world of functional medicine and nutrition and everything like that. And she was saying that a lot of the research that she was coming across was talking about how diversity of phytonutrients is an important part of, I don't know if she was referencing to gut microbiome, she probably was, but anything else that you've seen that, you know, you want to add in with phytonutrients when people think about regularly including it in our diet?
Yeah, so I think, you know, flavonoids, carotenoids, lignans are important. If we just talk about it in terms of foods, which is what most people are thinking about.
Catechins, would that be in that category as well?
Yeah, catechins would be in there. All the different types of fiber that we talked about. You've got a whole range of polysaccharides that are in things like seaweed. These foods, I think, I mean, there is some of the tried and true dietary advice that's still very good, which is like eating the rainbow. You know, I think I grew up hearing that phrase maybe in my like late teens or early 20s or something like. But the reason that that's good advice is all of these phytonutrients produce pigments that are of different colors. And so if you eat things that are bright green and bright yellow and orange and red and, you know, all of the different colors that you're going to see in plant foods, you're going to actually end up getting a pretty broad range of these different types of phytonutrients. You can even see it with eggs. Like if you buy pasture-raised eggs, you might see that the color of the egg yolk changes over time. It could be really yellow at certain times of year. It could be dark orange at certain types of year. That's because the chickens are eating different types of plant foods at different types of year, and those different nutrients actually affect the color of the yolk. So that's like a really good example of how this plays out in real life. So, you know, just eating dark leafy greens, like we mentioned, fruits and vegetables. Sea vegetables have some unique nutrients that are harder to find in other types of plant foods. Fermented and pickled, naturally pickled fermented vegetables are really important because the fermentation process actually releases a lot of the nutrients and makes them more bioavailable, in addition to producing probiotic compounds that are going to, you know, benefit our gut. I think we don't, you know, I don't like people to have to overthink that side of things. I think with the plant foods in particular, just eating the broadest kind of variety that you can, and including fermented foods in there, will get you most of the way there.
All right, let's talk about Adapt Naturals. Tell us about what it is and why you created it.
Yeah, so, you know, my Drew, I think you know this about me. Like, early in my career, my idealism was that we should be able to meet all our nutrient needs through food. That was where I started. And I knew even early on that, like, okay, with vitamin D, magnesium, a couple others, that probably wasn't realistic. But I feel like we're adapted to get nutrients from food, and that's the best way to get them. And I still feel that way. Like, I still feel like the foundation of any nutrient strategy needs to be a whole foods nutrient dense diet. Because you absolutely cannot supplement yourself out of a bad diet. I'm not one of these people who believes we can have like Soylent Green and, you know, we should just be able to drink our food out of a tube and not worry about eating food. No, I think food is, like joy and pleasure, like I mentioned, is integral to our experience as human beings. But what changed for me is 15 years of treating patients and testing every patient that walked through the door for nutrient levels, and finding maybe 10 people in that entire 15-year career that had fully adequate levels of all nutrients. I'm not exaggerating.
And just for a quick question, what test, so if people are going to go see a doctor or they're looking it up themselves, what tests were you typically using when you're looking at
nutrient
levels?
Yeah, that's probably another 2-hour podcast. I wish it wasn't. I wish there was one test I could have ordered for all patients. But as I think I mentioned this earlier, but different nutrients show up in different tissues.
Yes.
So for some nutrients, you need to do hair to get the long-term status. For other nutrients, a 24-hour urine analysis is better option. For some, you need to measure the blood. For some, you can get it in buccal swabs, like magnesium. The best way to actually measure intracellular magnesium is to take a little bit of tissue from inside the cheek and send that off to a lab.
Wow.
So it's complicated.
We're going to bring you back for a part two to talk about that.
I mean, I did test like this, you know, as you pointed out, I was often working with people who were really sick, and we really wanted to get to the bottom of what was going on. And these people were highly motivated. We're not talking about the average person off the street who came to see me in the practice. These folks were paying a lot of attention to their nutrient levels, and they were still low. So that was like clue number one for me was, uh-oh, even people who are really paying a lot of attention to this are not getting, and eating really good diets are not getting enough nutrients. Clue number two was the, you know, nearly 2 decades of research that I've done on all of these topics that we've been talking about on the show, and putting together all of the dots where, like, oh, the RDA was never actually developed for health. And oh, wait, the RDA has not been updated for 25 or 30 years, even though body weight has increased by 30 pounds during that period. Oh, wait, RDA doesn't consider nutrient synergy. RDA doesn't consider health status and the fact that people have health conditions that increase demand for nutrients. And, you know, all of these factors, and I'm just like all the lights starting to go off. Like, we are dealing with this epidemic of nutrient deficiency. And as much in my heart of hearts as I would like to be able to solve that 100% with food, I just no longer think that's possible. So Adapt Naturals was the natural evolution or result of all of those realizations. And I wanted to create a way that people could close the nutrient gap, not replace nutrients from food, but build on a solid approach, you know, nutrient dense whole foods diet, and add the nutrients back in that the modern world has crowded out so that people can feel and perform their best. And that's why I created Adapt Naturals and our first line of supplements, which is called the Core Plus Bundle. It's a daily stack of 5 products. Not surprisingly, contains all the nutrients that we've been talking about here in the most bioavailable, highly absorbable forms, in just a super easy way to take them so that people can not have to worry about it and think about it and just set it and forget it.
I love it. And, you know, one of the things that I often see is that people want to, again, on top of a base of a good diet, they want to take the right supplementation, and they're piecemealing a little bit here and there, and you just kind of forget. You forget to include this one. You end up with a lot of bottles. So the fact that you've kind of put them all together is very exciting for me, because I'm excited to dive into it myself and just say, great, these are the ones that are here, in addition to maybe some other ones that I might take for me specifically. And it's like, cool, here's your go-to. Here's your five that are there. What are your hopes in terms of how you want people to be interacting with this? Is this something that they take every month? And do they ever take breaks from these? Like sometimes in the past, people would say like, okay, great. Every so often take a break from supplementation, you know, even if it's a good thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it will depend on the person. I mean, I designed these to be something that could be taken long-term and think about it as just providing the nutrient foundation that we need for optimal health. As you pointed out, some people will need to take additional things, like maybe somebody is dealing with gut issues, and so they need to take a very gut-specific, you know, supplement, or they're dealing with, you know, another particular, you know, health issue that requires a specific approach. I purposely designed these to be helpful no matter where people are starting from. So if somebody is doing pretty well, like you mentioned this hypothetical person before who doesn't have like a serious chronic illness or anything like that, but they just aren't, their energy's lower, they're not sleeping as well, you know, maybe their blood sugar's starting to creep up a little bit, or their mental clarity isn't as great. So, you know, a lot of those issues are nutrient issues, as we've talked about. So it's designed for that person. At the same time, I wanted it to be something that people who do have chronic health conditions can safely take. So we designed the level, the doses, and the interaction between all of the nutrients in a way that would be, you know, tolerable for most people with most conditions. Now, of course, if someone has a specific issue, they should always talk to their doctor. But we wanted these to be really versatile in that way. And in terms of breaks, for me, mostly I think about breaks with botanical products. So like herbs and, you know, specific form, not even all herbs, but some herbs that I think over time we can develop tolerance to, or we, you know, it's just better to kind of pulse them. Most of these products are mostly nutrients. You know, we don't have a lot of botanicals or things in there that need a break. From that you need a break from. So I really did design these to be kind of the daily stack that you just set and forget.
Do you take them all in the morning, or do you sort of space them out throughout the day?
It's best to space them out. We have a guide for how to take them. But there are certain nutrients that we want to kind of maintain consistent blood levels of throughout the day. Folate is a good example of that. B12 is an example of that. And then, you know, most people just tend to feel better when they get that more steady level throughout the day. So that's twice a day.
Twice a day.
Morning, you know, if you eat breakfast, take them with breakfast. And then dinner, take them with dinner. Pretty simple.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited that by the time this podcast will be out there, the company will have been launched. And the website is, again,
AdaptNaturals.com.
I love it. We'll link to it in the show notes. And definitely please, everyone, check it out if you're looking for that solution in your life, which I know a lot of people are.